For members only, Golf Smarter number 294, published on August 16, 2011.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The psychology behind the pre-shot routine with Dr. Patrick Cohn.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to Golf Smarter for members only, Patrick.
Thank you, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for contacting me. You are a golf podcaster as well. Is that not correct?
I am. I have the Golf Psychology Podcast, which I try to do weekly, but with my time demands of coaching, it ends up being maybe twice a month that I can get it out there.
Yeah, well, that's what happens with podcasting. It turns into a black hole once you get started and you're like, oh, wait a minute, I never wanted to be a recording engineer. I just wanted to put content out there. And that thing starts snowballing, and then you get audience who start writing to you, and you're like doing a lot more than you ever anticipated you would, right?
Yeah, but it's a wonderful platform to educate people about the mental game of golf and to give them some quick tips and have them interact with me.
So you're doing a couple times a month. How long is your show?
I do two versions of my show. I do an interview show, which is usually only about 15 to 20 minutes, where I'll interview an expert. But typically what I do is I'll answer a question from one of my readers. So they'll email in a question, and then basically I'll sit down at the microphone and hammer out a quick answer for them because I feel like, you know, sometimes they don't have the attention span where they want to listen to me for, you know, an hour long. So I hammer out a 5-minute typically an answer for them. And I have the Sports Psychology Podcast as well, and I do the same format. I switch back and forth between an interview format and just a Q&A format.
And what is the difference between your Golf Psychology Podcast and your Sports Psychology Podcast?
Well, the Sports Psychology Podcast is more general. It's not golf specific. And obviously, I open it up to other athletes that ask questions. And I also have mental game experts. I interview other mental game experts that want to talk about sports psychology.
Well, it's interesting. Do the questions that come in for other sports, do they also relate to golf or vice versa? Will you get questions about golf that can relate to any other athlete?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And vice versa. So, yeah, any question I get from an athlete can be, you know, relate to golfers or it can relate to tennis players, hockey players. So, yeah, I actually have I actually do four podcasts out there. So I'm a stud. Just like you. But and it keeps me pretty busy. But I have a full time assistant that helps me as well.
Oh, lucky you. you have a real business going on, and just your podcasts are just fun. So in regards to the questions that you get, and it was interesting, you said tennis. Yeah, I can see tennis, the mental game. Hockey, there's a mental game part of hockey. It's not all all just reaction.
And, you know, any performance, it doesn't really matter whether it's hockey or golf or tennis or surgery or a surgeon or a musician. I get contacted by musicians and singers. Fred, I mean, it's just across the board, performance is performance. If you have performance anxiety, you know, or if you have fear of failure, it's going to affect your performance. So it could be test anxiety. It could be stage anxiety. It could be a golfer, you know, that's worried about, you know, the first tee jitters and hitting a bad shot. So, yeah, it doesn't really matter. Sports psychology can go even beyond sports, I think, to any area when you're dealing with the mind and performance.
Yeah, and I would think that the anxiety level leading up to, let's say, the drop of the puck or game time could definitely have an impact on your performance in the game. But golf, to me, there's so many opportunities during a round of golf that your mind can mess with you. Versus in a hockey, once you're on the ice, you're just reacting. Do you have time? Does the mental game get in the way while you're playing?
Well, you're right. On those reactive type of sports, I think it is easier for athletes to, you know, have a good mental game. But yes, if they start overthinking or they start overanalyzing their game, or they're worried or concerned about what a coach does, coach is going to yank me, you know, if I make mistakes. So it still applies even in those fast-paced, reactive-type sports.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have gone in that direction, but I can understand. It can hamper any athlete, any performance.
But I think you're right. Golf has some specific mental game challenges that come with it. The ball sits stationary, and that presents a challenge in and of itself because golfers can overthink and overanalyze what they're doing and let a lot of negative thoughts and indecision come into play before they hit the ball. And then the other factor that you have is sometimes you won't hit a shot for 5 minutes. And what do you do with the downtime in between shots? And then how do you get refocused? If you've had a conversation with a playing partner, how do you get refocused for your shot? And having to concentrate, you know, so I think there's some, you could say some myths out there by golfers about concentration. Some rounds last 5 hours, let's face it. A lot of my students on the mini tours, you know, they'll be playing 5 hour rounds. You can't focus for 5 hours in a row. It's just, it's simply impossible to have a high level of focus. So that, once again, that requires the demands of being able to go in and out with your concentration, be able to click it in when it's your turn to play, be able to, what I call, relax your focus in between shots so that you can kind of, I call it saving your concentration for the end of the round, because not everybody can be Ben Hogan-like, and I don't know if Ben Hogan was able to concentrate for 4 hours in a row. You know, I haven't talked to him personally, but it appeared that way. You know, it appeared that he was completely focused on his game for the entire round, and I think golfers make a mistake when they try to do that, when they actively try to be stoic and only focused on their game and try to focus just straight through.
Well, it brings us to probably the greatest example of our generation, and that would be Tiger Woods, where when he was in his earlier prime, and not saying he's not going to get back to that, hopefully we'll be able to see some greatness again from him, but he was completely in a zone for 4+ hours. It felt like. I mean, you're just watching it on TV. And now there's just seems to be distractions all over the place that won't allow him to focus for that long. But you're saying that he wasn't necessarily completely focused for all that time, that maybe he was focused from the time he got to the place where his ball was and then started focusing on when the shot was. Do you have any sense?
Absolutely. Well, that's what I tell my students. You know, how long does it take you to do your routine? How long is it, you can do your yardage. You can get your yardage really with your eyes closed. I mean, that's pretty simple, just pacing off your yardage. But after you get your yardage, then there's some decision making that starts to come in, certainly with your club selection and the wind. And from that point to the point at which you strike your ball, it can be anywhere from 20 to 35 seconds at the most for a golfer that's playing deliberately. So most people can focus for, you know, 20 to 30 seconds at a crack. And that's what I encourage my students is really know what you're supposed to focus on during those 20 or 30 seconds and try to immerse yourself in that routine. And then relax, have a good time. Try to enjoy yourself between shots. There's no sense grinding on your next shot until you get to your ball, you know, and then it's time to kick up your focus, have some type of a trigger. You know, I know some sports psychologists and mental coaches out there have, you know, suggested that you have some type of a physical trigger once you get to your ball to click it in. Maybe it's just pulling the club out of the bag, for example, or tugging your hat, you know, tighter on, or putting your glove on, or something that indicates, okay, it's my turn to play. Let's get focused on only my shot and what I have to do. Let's let go of the conversation and just get into my routine for the next 20 seconds. So that's absolutely what I tell my students is you don't need to be focused for the entire period. You can click it in for 30 seconds at a time, relax your focus, try to have fun and enjoy yourself on the golf course between shots.
And then there could be verbal triggers as well that you to yourself, correct?
Certainly. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but so at, you're setting yourself up for that 30 seconds, your 20 seconds, you're behind the ball, you're visualizing your shot, you're checking out what your target is, you're getting your confidence that you pulled the right club. But what I see so frequently when I'm out on the golf course is people who don't get behind the ball. They don't necessarily have a routine, and they do all their thinking while they're standing over the ball.
Yes. Well, it's interesting we're going in this direction, Fred, because this is actually my expertise. I originally did my PhD dissertation on pre-shot routines.
Really?
While I was at the University of Virginia, studying under Bob Rotella. So this is actually a sweet spot for me in terms of routines. But yes, you could say, maybe your high handicap golfers that aren't as tuned into the mental game are going to go through the motions physically. I mean, you certainly need to set up to the ball. You need to find a target and set up to the ball, maybe take a practice swing at the very least. But often the difference between good mental preparation and no mental preparation is having what I call a mental routine and not just the physical routine. So you can separate them and you can look at it from a physical standpoint of, yeah, I have to take a practice swing and maybe feel what I want to do with the shot. I have to align to the ball, and I have to know where I'm going with it. So at the very basic level, but I actually take my students through and talk about what I think is the more important components, and that's the mental side of the routine, the decision-making that you're doing, the feeling or seeing the shot, committing to the shot and the club that you have in your hand, and then going up and being able to trust in your skills. So that breeds the consistency. Certainly having a physical routine can help breed consistency. But if you don't have a routine, then what's going to happen when you're up over the ball? You're going to have six different swing thoughts, maybe. You're going to have doubt and indecision come in easier for you. So I'm a big believer that consistent mental preparation is going to lead to much more consistent performance. And I think low handicappers and certainly professional golfers understand that concept.
You mean we could just spend days and weeks and months talking about pre-shot routine and you're right on top of it, huh?
Yep. Awesome. Yep. This is my sweet spot.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, let's keep going then because I I try to practice a pre-shot routine, whether with a long club or putting. I mean, I have two different routines there. And I know that I will not perform as well if I kind of rush through it or don't do what I do, especially even on the putting green. My pre-shot routine seems to be pretty consistent, even with a 3 or 4 foot putt. I have to stay with it. And I apologize to my playing partners that sometimes it feels like I take too long, but a routine seems to me to be critical for any success in my game.
Yeah, and I'll comment on that. If you're concerned that you're taking too long, then that's certainly problematic because then you're either rushing right through the routine or you're thinking, I hope my playing partners don't think I'm holding them up. In either case, that to me is problematic.
Sure, because no one's ever said to me, Fred, could you please play a little faster? I mean, that's not happened, but sometimes I feel like I'm holding the group up.
Right. I had a question, just that exact same question today about, I feel like I'm slowing my group down, and sometimes they complain I'm taking too long. But you have to think about, are you within the rules? I think on the tour they give you 45 seconds. I don't know what the USGA ruling is on it, but on the putting green, I believe it's 45 seconds once it's your turn to play. You can read the putt. certainly why other people are putting. You can get your plan and your read and kind of get committed, maybe do a little visualization before it's your turn. Then it's just a matter of going through the final parts of the routine. So once you get this, I think the biggest part for golfers is they stalk the green a lot. That can take quite a bit of time. But once you get your read and it's your turn to go, it can be very quick.
Yeah. Yeah. And ready golf. Ready golf is just critical, right?
Yeah. It's the decision making that's critical. I think golfers are better with their routines in putting than they are with the full shot. I don't know why. Maybe just because there's less happening with the putter. It's more of a defined area, and they know they have to read the green and make a decision on the read. There's a lot of other factors, I think, that go into the ball striking routine in terms of wind, lie, club selection, target selection. So there might be more elements that make it difficult for them to have a consistent routine with the full shot.
Well, what I find so interesting is on a full shot versus a putt is that the target is so much smaller with the putt. Your target is so well defined with a full shot. You know, I've got that much room, you know, and as you get closer to the green, your target gets smaller and smaller. So I would think that the putt would induce more anxiety than any other swing or not.
Well, yes, with some golfers, absolutely. It's more the finality of it. This 6 footer is the difference between, you know, 1 stroke and 2 strokes.
Right.
So there are some golfers that get closer to the hole. There's more anxiety for them about it because, you know, you can hit a 250-yard drive, but then on a 6 footer, the last 6 feet is going to determine your score for the hole. And that can be unsettling for some golfers, you know, as they get closer to the hole. But not in all cases. I find that sometimes it can be the opposite, where they're trying so hard to hit it close, they're trying so hard to get on the green, that they put pressure on the other areas of their game as well, all the way back to the driver. So I got to get a big drive there so I can get a short iron into the green.
Yeah, I had a round recently where I was playing on a short par 4 that kind of bends to the right, which favored my drive. And my drive left me right in the middle of the fairway, 70 yards from the pin. So that's the first shot, and it took me 6 more shots to get the ball in the cup.
Yeah.
And then I feel like now I'm rushing and I'm holding everyone up and I'm not going through my routine, and it just goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
It was driving me crazy. And those are the times that I get the most frustrated, when I feel like, and I know that when I start rushing, my game just falls apart, because I'm like, I'm rushing, and I feel pressured, and I just don't play as well. I'm not enjoying it as much. I'm not, you know, relaxed enough. And I got to believe that I'm not the only one that feels that way.
No, I hear it a lot, even from high-level golfers. When you're rushing, certainly, when you're rushing, you're either anxious or you're frustrated, and it's like, get me out of here. So anytime
yes,
you're rushing, whatever the reason you're rushing, it's not good for the game, in other words, because when you rush, you skip the most important part of your routine or your pre-shot routine, and that's the decision-making. You just get up to that chip as quick as you can. I got to get this over with. You know, I'm holding everybody up. I'm making a fool of myself. Let's get up there and get it next to the hole so I can get out of here. You don't make good decisions. You don't plan the shot. You don't think through the shot. You don't see a target or a landing area where you want to put the ball. And then you get up over it, and it's just there's nothing driving the cart there. To me, there's always two parts of the routine, two general areas I talk about, and then I break it down further. But there's a planning and programming stage, and then there's the procedural stage over the ball of aim and align and executing the shot, of course. But when you skip the planning and programming parts of the routine when you're rushing, that's when things can really start to break down.
Interesting. So, Dr. Cohn, I'm curious, do you have a mapped out pre-shot routine that you like to to work from, or is everybody unique? Or do you say, you know what, this is, I think, would work for you, or this is how I like to do it? And can you help us through that?
Well, it's a great point. I have a template that I use that, okay, I modify for my students. Now, the difference, I think, Fred, is you have to understand your, what I call your predominant learning modality or your predominant performance modality. They're one and the same. If you're a visual learner and performer, then we have to build that into the routine, right? If you're more of a...
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to stop you. What does that mean? You have to build that into the routine if you're a visual.
Well, I'll make it simple. Some people see lines and can react to lines, are very good. You know, the line just sticks out at them. Oh, I see the line. They look at the green. They see a line. That's a visual performer.
Okay.
Not everybody has that ability. I remember I was working with Grant Waite 1 year at Bay Hill, and this is, I think, before he had won, but we were talking about his routine, and we're talking about visualizing shots, and he says to me, you know, everybody talks about visualizing shots and seeing the ball fly through the air, and he says, I can't do that. And I said, you know what, not everybody can do that. I said, it's okay to just feel the ball flight or feel the shot that you want to hit. You're more of a feel or a kinesthetic player, and that's perfectly acceptable. And that was like a huge relief for him.
Oh, I bet.
Told him he didn't have to visualize a shot, because you hear so much about Jack Nicklaus talking about, you know, going to the movies in his head and visualizing the shot, but not everybody is a visual performer. And so that's the place that you have to start with when structuring the routine and thinking about the routine, is what type of performer are you? What's your preference in terms of speed, you know, our pacing of the routine, and what are the idiosyncrasies that you have in terms of, you know, maybe tugging up your pant leg, or you see a lot of guys tugging on their sleeves, pulling up their sleeves, and things like that. So it's very individualized in terms of those type of things, but from the overall structure of the mental preparation, I have a general template that I like to start with.
Yeah, I was going to say, so let's go back to your template, because I interrupted you and I apologize. So let's go back to the template.
Okay, we can talk a little bit about the template. So I would want to start with what you do. So if we're on the putting green, Fred, I usually have like a two-hour putting green, two-hour putting clinic that I take my students through, strictly on the mental game.
Wow.
And practice. And so I would ask you, you know, let's put a ball down from 10 feet. Talk me through and walk me through what your routine is. So I don't know if you want to participate in this forum, but that's where I would start with you, is give me a feel. Show me what it would look like and talk. Tell me what's in your mind when you're going through the routine. So I always start from the perspective of, what are you doing? First of all,
I'll play. You want to do this? I'll do it.
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead and ask. Where should I start?
That 10-footer on the course, when you're on the course, let's say it's a standard, you know, little right to left 10-footer. How would you approach that? What would your routine be, and how would you think?
Okay. So I'd start with, I'll take you through my routine. I'll put my marker behind the ball, but I'll leave the ball there unless it's blocking somebody. I'll go to the opposite side of the pin and look at, look at the line from the ball to the hole, but then take a scan from left to right over the entire green and see if I can read which way the green is going to roll left or right, if, you know, from where my ball is coming. And I'll try to draw a line from my ball to the hole. I'm not the kind of guy that says, okay, I'm 3 inches outside the hole. I'll try to find the point where the ball is going to hit its apex and then break back towards the hole, right? And I also look at like the last 12 to 24 inches where the ball's coming from before it goes in the hole. Then I'll walk back around to my ball. I'll get behind. What I'll do is I'll start at the hole and I'll walk to my ball and count the amount of steps that I have and figure how many feet do I have to make that putt. Then I'll get behind my ball, and I'll, again, try to find a line and see if it's consistent with what I had on the other side. And I'll make this line in my mind of where the ball is going to go, and then I will take the ball that I have drawn a line around the ball. I mark my ball with a line on it, and I'll line up where I think the ball is going to start heading. I'll put that line, and then I'll step over the ball. I'll step behind the ball, take a couple practice swings, looking at the hole the whole time, just swinging on what I think the feel is going to be to get the ball there, right? Just like faking a practice shot, doing a free throw. So I'll just, you know, take a couple swings. Then I'll step up to the ball, and I'll put my feet parallel to the line that's on the ball. I'll look over at the hole, and I'll follow that line from the hole to my ball, trying to see what the pace is of what the ball's going to do, you know, just by with my eyes visualizing it all the way to my ball. Then I'll step up with my feet together. I will, again, now I'll make a right angle from that line on the ball to make sure that my feet are in the same line. Once again, I will look at the hole, follow it back to my all the way to my putter, and then with an equal force, bring the putter back, and then make my putt.
Wow.
So now you see why I think I'm going too long. Now you think it's like, am I?
Are they bringing the straight drag jacket out for you or what?
You asked.
I can tell you have the tendency to overanalyze your game just from how you described that to me. Because it's very detailed oriented, a lot more detail. But, you know, you're in the business of the communication business, so maybe that's part of it as well. You able to voice that to me, all that. You know, usually I'll say if you're a student, well, that's great. We can work with that. We can work with that, Fred. So let's talk about what to do.
Should I be lying down when I explain this to you?
So notice that a lot of what you describe were the physical components of what you're doing. You certainly did talk about drawing lines and, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to, you know, see the line and all that, which is all very good. The one thing I wanted to comment before we get into the specific routine is I never want my students to count off and pace off a putt because I never want you to hit a 20-footer or a 30-footer or a 35-footer or a 10-footer because I want that to be instinctive. I want that to be your natural touch, your natural targeting mechanism to take over that. The problem that could lead to is you start stroking it for a 15-footer, you start stroking it for a 20-footer. And to me, that's not trusting your touch and your innate ability to control your speed.
And I see it as just more input.
More input, yeah. Certainly could be. But as long as you're not trying to stroke a 20-footer, or a little downhill, a little uphill, 20-footer. This is how much I have to take the putter back.
No, to me, it's like, okay, so what does it feel like? You know, it's like, okay, this is supposed to feel like 20-footer. Or, you know, I actually recently, it's so funny you say that, because I recently have made two putts that were, I thought, pretty long putts for me. One was about 25 feet. Actually, it was 24. And another one was about 60-plus feet. And just before I hit it, I go, okay, this is a 64-footer. And I was playing, you know, my son looked at me like, what are you doing? Shut up. And it went in. And I was like, I needed to tell myself that I'm going to have to hit this one uphill 60 feet and I got to bring it to. So to me, that's just added input to tell my body this is what it's going to feel like.
And how is your touch generally with that? Do you three putt often?
No.
Okay. As long as it's additional input and you're not putting a 60-foot stroke on it, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I want people to rely on their touch and their natural targeting mechanisms to drive the distance rather than a specific distance. So you're doing a lot of good things. You're going to both sides, certainly.
But I'm doing too much.
Well, no, I said the tendency, I think, is to, for you, just listening to you, the tendency is to overanalyze and maybe second guess. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that you do it, but that's your tendency. Whereas other golfers, it could be to leave important details out, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. on the other end of the spectrum. So the first part is, for me, is for my students, is to get a read and do the things that you're doing to get a read, looking at both sides of the hole, never from the side. It's always on the line that you want to look at, and then you want to make that decision. I call it using your imagination to see the line. So you drew a line. I don't know if you've ever saw that commercial that Tiger Woods did where maybe it was an Accenture, I'm not sure, but he'd be hitting putts in his mind, and they would miss, and they would miss. So he's pre-playing the putts, and then finally one goes in, and then he steps over the ball, you know, and hits the putt. So I teach my golfers to pre-play the putt with their imagination. If you were, you know, standing up over the ball and you hit the putt from that location, can you see the ball, the line, and the track it's going to take? And so I ask my students to do that on both sides of the hole and hopefully, you know, come to an agreement that it looks the same on both sides. That's obviously the best. The most important aspect of the mental routine is once you get your line, Fred, that you're fully committed to carrying out that plan.
Yeah.
You're seeing it. You're absolutely locked into the line. It's like, it's, I call it lock on, like laser lock on. You're not letting that plan deviate from your mind as you go up and approach the ball. And that's the challenge for golfers is they'll get a read from behind, which is the right place to read the putt from. They'll get up over the ball, and their eyes are in a different position. They're in a different position. And now it starts to feel and look a little bit different to them.
Yep.
So they'll change their mind at the last second, and they'll play a little more break or a little bit less break. And that second-guessing and indecision is a golfer's worst enemy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I know that sometimes when I step over the ball, all of a sudden it looks like a completely different line, like it's going to break differently. And that's when what I like to call a mental mulligan, where I just step away from the ball. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get charged on my scorecard for this mulligan, but I'm going to walk away and start again because, like, wait a minute, that's not right. So it breaks my confidence. It breaks my thought process, right?
Yeah, and you're doing absolutely the right thing. You're saying, well, wait a second. I've got two lines in my mind. I got to step away and get decided here.
Yeah.
That's the planning and programming stage. The planning and programming stage is you're getting the read. You're committing to the read. You're seeing the last 2 feet of it, which is great. That's a great image. How the ball is traveling into the hole. Is it coming in at, you know, 6 o'clock? Is it coming in at 9 o'clock? Where's the ball coming in at?
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful image. Then, to me, after the planning and programming, once you step up to the ball, it's simple procedure. But when I say simple procedure, there's some other what I call mental game elements that are important. Number one, it's to focus on the execution, or what I call the process. And number two, it's to have trust in your stroke and not guide it and steer it and tighten up, yip at it or whatever. To me, those are the important mental elements. That's the template that I teach, but I try to work within the framework of your routine. Your current routine.
Fabulous. Well, I know that you have a lesson coming up in a couple minutes and you've got to go, so I'm going to cut this off here. This has been amazing. I really I enjoyed talking to you about this and helping myself and learning more about my own problems. But tell me again a website where we can find more information about you and what your stuff is.
The mothership is at peaksports.com. That's peak, P-E-A-K, sports.com.
Mm-hmm.
The golf podcast is the Golf Psychology Podcast, and you can certainly find that on iTunes or on my blog site.
Sure.
As well at peaksports.com.
Yeah, and there will be links in the show notes of golfsmarter.com to this conversation. Patrick, it was really great to speak with you. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to be on your podcast at some point as well. and you can keep picking my brain so I can find out more about this. Because I actually would like to talk to you about the post-shot routine, too.
Excellent. Well, okay, I'll send you the bill for the putting lesson today.
Yeah, the check's in the mail. Coming up next, Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf Schools returns for the first of two conversations on the top 10 traits of better golfers. And for all those Golf Smarter listeners who've been incredibly patient, Tony Manzoni's book is finally out. The Lost Fundamental, One Simple Move, Better Golf Forever, is only available in the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.